Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And I have a clinical child psychologist and our parenting expert, Dr. David Coleman, here with me. You're very welcome, David.
For change, made it all the way up.
Lovely to have you with us. And 51551 is the text number. Still plenty of time to send a message in to David if you have a question. Now, I'm sure we'll have lots of people talking to us about back to school and all of that because it's front of mind as we search for the pencil cases and the lunchbox. But I'm going to go down in age a little bit now. This is a query about breastfeeding and sibling jealousy. So our listener is a mother of two girls. The eldest is three, and she says, my second is less than a year old, extremely placid and content baby. I gave my three-year-old all of me until my second baby was born and we had the most wonderful time. Now they have to share me. I found it hard to wean my three-year-old. She still has milk from time to time. She looks for breast milk every day. I'm beginning to feel very much controlled by my older girl. She won't sleep. She generally won't follow direction. It's becoming very wearing. Maybe there's an element of jealousy between the two girls, she says. Any advice? I'd say definitely maybe on the theme of the day.
I guess it's interesting. I'm not sure if it's jealousy with her sister, but I'd say she's probably just cross with her mammy, that her mammy has actually had to change everything and that her mammy isn't as available as she used to be and that she's not the centre of attention. I think that's just probably a hard transition for her, but that's all it is. It's just a transition. But I think it'll really help the mum if she focuses on the fact that it's a transition. So rather than expecting her to just kind of, you know, make this space for the new baby, who's what, less than a year, so possibly, you know, 10 months old even still, but that she actually has to create space and she has to know that she is still as important to the mum as she always was, even though the mum won't be able to demonstrate that perhaps in terms of her time or the attention that she gives. And so because she's three, she can begin to start to use words in terms of, you know, actual empathetic statements like, oh, I think it's been really hard for you since your sister arrived, and oh, I think you'd love if it was just me, and I think you'd love if you could still just cuddle up with me all the time, and isn't it hard having to make space on my other knee for your sister, and all those kinds of phrases, because I think that then allows a three-year-old, again, she's only three, so her own vocabulary might not be that broad, but I think it'll allow her to understand that her mom gets it, that it's hard, that it's not easy having a little sister, even though of course there will be real benefits to having a little sister in due course as they get a bit older and they can play together and all those kinds of things. So she's only three, she's not going to see that, but that's, I think, where this mum needs to go, is just a lot of empathy and acknowledgement of the fact that it's a difficult transition, a natural one but difficult nonetheless, and that it's all going to be okay in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And how does she get through it herself? Because, you know, she says it's wearing for her, and it's tricky when you have two little ones around, you know, three and under, pretty much.
Absolutely. And so I think that's all about then the social support that you get as a parent. And so if you have it with your partner, great. If your partner comes home already, you know, to take over and do all the bits, fantastic. If you don't, then, you know, make contact perhaps with parent toddler groups or friends, family, anybody who you feel can give you maybe just that little bit of a break, who'll entertain your three-year-old so you can actually have a little bit of other time with the younger daughter, or maybe take the younger daughter so that you can have, again, that little bit of special time with the older daughter. Mm-hmm. So that might help. But I think it's about just making those connections, because it is, again, I think for most of us who've been through that phase, you know, it is so intense. And yet it does pass, but it's very hard when you're in the middle of it to see that there is a future where actually you'll have a bit of space, where you actually can go to the toilet without somebody having to be there, you know, holding on to a knee, and where you have, you know, all those difficult moments, I think, as a parent, you know, because it is, it's very full on.
And you think, and you do, you think there's no end to it, but there is.
There is an end to it. All mine have left the house now.
I know.
It actually does end.
Completely the
well,
other
not that it doesn't
of
end,
it.
End, because of course you're still very involved in their
never
lives.
Ends.
But it never ends.
This one now, we're going up in age. So this daughter is going into third year. So she's a lovely, friendly girl, but struggled to make friends at school in her first 2 years of secondary school. And the cliques have now formed. She's anxious about going back to school tomorrow and having nobody to hang out with. Oh, that's difficult, isn't it?
Very difficult. And I'd say the daughter probably has it nailed, in as much as there are cliques that are formed. Mm. And she may feel that there isn't that kind of fluidity or flexibility in terms of making new friends now, that that's going to be tricky. Sometimes you can be lucky. There might be just a new person arise in the school, and that might be the catalyst for a shift in a group, or it might allow you the, you know, that they become somebody that you can connect with. So all is not lost for that girl going into third year. But I think it is tricky. and it's probably, I mean, I don't want to sound too fatalistic, but it may well be TY before she actually feels that there is some hope of really getting to know other kids in the year, because you know, TY does tend to be a lot more fluid socially for young people. I think, you know, there's a real tendency when you arrive in first year, you make these connections with your friends, and then it's almost like you have to stick with those friends for exactly the reason she's saying, that there's nowhere else to go. You can't just move to a new group. It's just not done.
It's really hard for her, though. You know, you can imagine you'd have lunch break, nobody to have your lunch with. It's a really difficult place. But you're saying she may have to manage that now through to
She
the
may
end
have
of
to manage it.
Year.
And again, the other way sometimes that it shifts for young people is that through some of the extracurricular activities that she might do. So she is involved in any, whether it be, you know, art, drama, sport, music, whatever it might be, that if she has connections there with some of the other people who, even though she might not feel like in school she'd be recognised by them, because that does happen too, that you can actually be friendly with somebody, you know, when you go to your drama and then you turn up in school on the Monday and they're still blanking you because you're just not part of their social circle. But sometimes, again, it does allow a connection in the school environment as well. And I think for most children in secondary school, you know, often they feel like, they just need one friend, they just need one person that they know they can confidently meet at the break times, at the lunch times, that they're not the ones wandering the corridors alone or sitting alone or hiding in the toilets and all the other things that do happen for some young people until they feel that sense of connection. But I think it's just a lot of support and empathy from the parents, acknowledging this is tricky, but it's going to change and you're going to get through it and it'll all be fine. And if all comes to all, just focus on your schoolwork for the year and, the social stuff will find its way perhaps next year.
Yeah. Is it important to say to that child, like, school is not the be all and end all. It's not your life in its totality. That you have other things, or you can have other things going on outside of that, your family connections, as you say, your extracurricular, whether that's connected to the school or not, just to demonstrate to them that it doesn't begin and end with what, you know, the 9 to 4 or whatever time it is.
And yet, I suppose, it, almost as you were saying, you know, you do have to acknowledge it is very central for her.
This is the
biggest social environment she's in. And so I think if, you know, if she's not connected into other extracurricular stuff, well, then this might be the year to do that, even though it's a junior's her year. I mean, the exams are ultimately going to be less important than her sense of self and her sense of feeling okay and connected and, socially accepted. So, yeah, focus perhaps on maybe building some other social connections outside of school, if at all, because that then means that you can say, look, you know, yes, school is difficult. It hasn't worked out for you so far, but you know you're well able to make friends. You know you have people who really care about you, but they're just not there, as you say, 9 to 4.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Let's move on to this message we've had from parents about their primary school age daughter, who's usually a very happy child, good at school, and has lots of friends. She's the youngest of our three children, but recently she described herself as fat and made some other disparaging comments about her weight. She's a perfectly healthy weight and she's very active in sport, and they're wondering what advice you might have. Wouldn't you love to know where that came from now in the child's mind that has been raised? And you'll never find out. You drive yourself bananas, so you just have to deal with helping her through it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't say what class she's in primary school, but,
no.
You know, if that's, say she's in fifth class, I mean, that's coming from the internet and that's coming from her peers then, and that's coming from the, you know, all of the messaging that's coming through social media and TikTok and all the rest of it, that that's, I think, where kids get these really stark messages that actually maybe they're not some ideal in terms of weight or shape or whatever it might be. I think always the message for girls, for boys, is to talk about health as opposed to weight anyway. The fact that she's a healthy weight and that she's quite normal and quite, you know, regular is a real bonus. And of course, I think for the parents, you know, stick with that messaging as well, that, you know, we know that you're absolutely exactly how you need to be. You know, your body is going to change anyway in the next whatever number of years if she's going to hit puberty and then so on. And so, really focus just on her overall health and on the fact that she's, you know, she's really healthy. She exercises, she plays sports or whatever else it is that she does. And so if you can identify where the message has come from, I know you said you could drive yourself mad, but typically it's probably coming from her social circle, I would say, that there's a general sense now amongst the girls in her class that actually there's an ideal that they all need to be subscribed to and that they should all be chasing. And and somebody could have, sometimes I hear with primary schools, it's the boys who make the comments and they're really cruel and they think nothing of going, but you're fat. you know, that it's these really offhand comments, not necessarily designed to be bullying or attacking, sometimes just careless and, you know, designed to just put somebody down quickly. But of course, for girls, then, you know, becomes hugely significant. And yeah, because I think it's all about, for most kids, you know, a sense of acceptance and that they're OK.
You'd have hoped that we'd moved past that. You know, we had body positivity. But look, I suppose that's proof that that hasn't worked.
Kids can be cruel.
Yeah.
Kids just can be cruel.
They find the vulnerability and go for it. Now, I have another one that's just come into us as well. This is about a 15-year-old. It's from a grandparent. So they say, my grandson needs help. He's 15. He stopped going to school last October. He won't go outside the house or mix with anyone. My son, who is this boy's dad, has tried everything. He got the boy's teacher to call to the house, but my grandson wouldn't talk to him. My son can't get the grandson to go to the doctor or to counselling. I'm so worried about him. He's such a lovely child. His parents separated during COVID, and this grandparent says, I'm brokenhearted for him, wasting his life, and I'd really appreciate some help.
Goodness. It's so difficult, I think, to be a grandparent in that situation as well, because I think she probably recognises that her opportunities even for influence are just limited. I mean, her own son, the boy's dad, is struggling to make the connections and to get him help. Ultimately, it does sound like he needs some kind of outside support, that whatever messages are coming through from his mum or his dad or the school is not enough to help him deal with whatever it was that caused that block back in October. And again, I mean, I see it more and more with, you know, in my own clinic, that it's very hard sometimes to pinpoint what it is. It's almost like this kind of general sense of, I just can't cope with school. And then when you try and track it back to see, well, was there an incident? Did something get said? Were you bullied? Did, you know, all the things that you might anticipate might be the reason why. It isn't often very clear, but it's almost like it's just become overwhelming. And so most commonly the overwhelm comes through some kind of social something, as opposed to the academic, unless there's a known kind of academic problem. Again, sometimes it is academic. It's like it just all builds up and then kids, you know, can't cope and then they miss school. And of course, the more school they miss, the harder it is to get back in and they feel like they're way behind academically. But more often it's something social and a feeling of overwhelm or a feeling of being on the outside, again, not quite sure how to connect in. Yeah. So, but I think it sounds like they really do need just a new, fresh perspective from somebody outside. So if they, even if the parents, I know they're separated, but it might be worth their while going to meet with a therapist, a counsellor, somebody who's, you know, used to working with teenagers, again, just to see, is there a different kind of language they could use to try and encourage him back into
it's finding the key to unlock that. You know, how do you get him to talk to somebody or to want to engage with somebody? That's the sort of impossible question that they're faced with at the moment, isn't it?
And often I think there's for a lot of teenagers, the reason that they don't talk to adults is that they fear some either direct, clear judgment or implied judgment of them and their behaviour and the choices that they've made. And so I think that's a really important stance to start with, which is to say, look, you know, we're just worried about you. We just really care about where you're at, as opposed to being cross about the fact that he's not in school or upset about the fact that he's not in school, all of which may actually lead him to feel like, well, I just can't talk to you now about this because I know you're disappointed in me or I know you're cross with me. And so somehow, you know, his parents have to kind of work through their own feelings about how they feel about him not being in school, so that they can actually then just really approach him with as much empathy, warmth, understanding and lack of judgment, so that that again might then free him up to just talk about what it is. If he can at all, he mightn't even be able to identify for himself what it is that's actually the real block to going to school. But of course, the longer he's out, the harder it becomes, because then he's got all this anticipation of, you know, having to face people and explain why he's been missing and, you know, and or all the academic stuff as well.
All right. Well, David, we'll leave it there. I wish that family well, because that is a really difficult one, but hopefully you've found something there to help you. And David will be back with us in a couple of weeks addressing more questions, and if you have any, do send them in to us now. todaycb@rte.ie is the email address, and we'll save them all up and we'll put them to David when he's back with us. David Coleman, thank you very much.